It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. State lawmakers wrapped up the 2020 legislative session this weekend in Charleston.
It's unbelievable what you've accomplished and what you've done. But not only have you done that, but you've done it in a lesser budget, and you've done stuff that's economically sound in every way.
We'll hear about what lawmakers did and didn't accomplish this year. This is West Virginia Morning. The West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources now has the capacity to test for coronavirus in-state. Prior to this point, tests had been sent to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In a press release, Governor Jim Justice said this will allow the state to respond faster to contain the disease if needed. Commissioner of Public Health Dr. Kathy Slemp said they expect commercial testing will soon be available, but the DHHR is working to make sure results are reported to the state so officials can keep accurate surveillance. To date, there are no confirmed cases of coronavirus in West Virginia. As of March 7, 2020, 5 residents have been tested for the disease. 2 tests were negative and 3 are pending, according to the press release. The West Virginia legislature wrapped up its 60-day session Saturday at midnight. Top billing this year was an extensive overhaul of the state's foster care system and a focus on other healthcare initiatives. However, some could say the session, which comes ahead of an election cycle, will be remembered for what failed as much as what was passed. Dave Mistich and Emily Allen recap the 2020 session with this report.
Before calling it a night on Saturday, the House and Senate agreed on a $4.6 billion general revenue budget for 2021. It appropriates slightly less than the current budget, but funds many of the priorities Republican Governor Jim Justice outlined on the session's first day. Justice celebrated those initiatives during brief visits Saturday to both chambers. Here he is speaking to members of the House.
You just think about the number of families that you have helped. Whether it be IDD or foster care or whatever it may be, Mountaineer Challenge Academy, community and schools, whatever. It's unbelievable what you've accomplished and what you've done. But not only have you done that, but you've done it in a lesser budget, and you've done stuff that's economically sound in every way. Our state's ready to rock and roll.
One of the budget's last-minute hang-ups had to do with $16.9 million that the House of Delegates requested for foster care reform. Earlier this week, the Senate was planning to reduce that to $4.9 million. Senators agreed to restore what was originally requested on Friday. House delegates on the left and right celebrated the news on Saturday before sending the bill to Justice. The money will lead to an increase in direct payments to foster families and child placing agencies that help them.
We've done some good things.
That's House Speaker Roger Hanshaw.
We've reformed foster care for the second straight year in a row. We've passed a balanced budget in 60 days. We've done some things to do economic development by putting people back to work. We have lowered some barriers to getting people back on the payroll. We've made it easier for people to get back driver's licenses. We've created the Mountaineer Impact Fund in House Bill 4001.
That's referring to a bill specifically from Hanshaw to create a fund to attract economic development. The fund would allow the state to use non-tax dollars to invest in projects located in West Virginia with private investors. Hanshaw says that for the average West Virginian, this will lead to more jobs in a state that consistently holds the nation's lowest workforce participation rate.
All those things taken together make it pretty easy to see that we're trying to get people back on the payroll here.
But there were also several proposals from leadership that did not make it across the finish line. Here's Senate President Mitch Carmichael.
Now, I would love to be talking to you right now saying we passed, we eliminated the subsidization of greyhound racing in West Virginia, which is a ridiculous subsidy. I would love to say we have an intermediate appellate court and that we substantively reformed the tax system in West Virginia. But we didn't get there on all of those.
The failed tax overhaul proposal called for the elimination of the manufacturing machinery, equipment, and inventory tax. This year's plan offered a rollback of personal property taxes on automobiles and also called for hikes on tobacco and consumer sales taxes. The two-step overhaul was a priority for Carmichael and other top Republicans.
We didn't get it across the finish line, but the people of West Virginia now know how their representatives vote on these issues, and they can make the decisions accordingly.
Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso says his caucus banded together to defeat the personal property tax repeal.
The inventory tax bill, it needs to be done, but we think there's a better way to do it. We didn't like the fact that we weren't involved, and we didn't want to pass on the burden to, the people of West Virginia. So in that aspect, we did our job, and we're pretty satisfied the way things turned out.
Per House Democrats, Minority Leader Tim Miley said one of their biggest regrets was not being able to advance legislation that would expand upon the state's as-of-yet-launched medical cannabis program, which was legalized in 2017.
There was the medical cannabis bill that died that I think most, if not everybody in our caucus, would have liked to have seen pass. It provided, I think, a much-needed fix to the medical cannabis program because that program has been slow getting off the ground. It was passed in 2017, and we're still not a fully functional medical cannabis program. And all that does is put us further and further behind other states, the 30 or so other states, that have a robust medical cannabis program.
While the final night of the season saw the completion of major health-related bills, including one to create a $100 cap on insulin copays and another to ensure dental coverage for Medicaid recipients, the night was also one of goodbyes. We heard going-away speeches from many major players around the Capitol, including Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso, House Minority Leader Tim Miley, and House Judiciary Chair John Schott. But
I just want to say that you'll always be in my heart. My family's always with me. Thank you.
I don't cry over much until I see someone else cry, and then it gets me flowing. But I want to say I was elected 16 years ago, and I can't tell you how blessed and highly favored I am to have had that opportunity.
Yeah, I'm looking at the lateness of the hour, and as someone who was a lawyer for a long time before he became a politician, I'm sure I could fill the remaining 45 minutes, but I know that there are people here who have bills that are important to them.
Looking back on the session, there weren't large-scale protests like in recent years. No teachers, no strikes. Just some run-of-the-mill debates, and not a lot of huge reforms. But more than likely, the relative quiet of the 2020 session may have been more of a result of the looming election cycle. How much this session might influence the May primary and November general elections remains to be seen. But with some big names in the legislature hanging it up and others vying for seats in Charleston, there's no question that the makeup of the House and Senate will look much different come the next regular session.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Allen.
And I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
Visit wvpublic.org to find all our recent legislative coverage, including a running blog from Saturday evening that highlights all the last-minute action taken by lawmakers in Charleston over the weekend. Again, that's at wvpublic.org. It's not often that a species listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act gets off the list, but in 2013, West Virginia's northern flying squirrel did. While challenges remain, federal biologists say the species continues to do well, in large part due to the restoration of its habitat, red spruce forest. Reporter Brittany Patterson recently took a hike in this iconic ecosystem to find out more.
To understand how West Virginia's northern flying squirrel is doing, it's essential to visit what remains of the state's high-elevation red spruce forests.
So the really cool thing about it is we always say, as the spruce goes, the squirrel goes.
That's U.S. Forest Service biologist Shane Jones. We're hiking in a rare patch of virgin spruce in the Monongalia National Forest. Rare because beginning in the late 1800s, the vast majority of the state's red spruce was logged. After the forests were clear-cut, devastating fires burned up much of the spruce seeds. In its place, hardwood forest grew back.
So we went from well over 1 million acres to less than 100,000 acres of red spruce forest. And that was the big disturbance that really threatened the northern flying squirrel.
The squirrels and red spruce forest are inextricably connected, says Cordy Diggins, a research scientist at Virginia Tech.
There's also certain food items that they like that are associated with spruce forests.
She's talking about truffles. People like them, and so do squirrels. The fungi grow along the roots of spruce trees in deep organic soils created in these high-elevation forests. Diggins says for almost three decades, the northern flying squirrel was under federal protection, largely because its habitat, the red spruce forest, was so endangered.
And the spruce forests go away, the squirrel's not going to have any habitat.
Recently, federal biologists released an optimistic status report. It found in the 5 years since being taken off the list of endangered species, northern flying squirrels are still found across much of their range. But not everyone is convinced the squirrels are out of the woods, or in the woods. Noah Greenwald directs the Endangered Species Program for the Center for Biological Diversity. The conservation group sued and won protections for the northern flying squirrel in the mid-2000s. He's concerned wildlife managers don't really know how many squirrels are out there.
They just have some, you know, sort of somewhat sporadically collected information showing squirrels to be present or absent in different areas.
And he has concerns about the forest restoration work to expand squirrel range.
So now we're going on to an area that we call the Maurer Tract.
As we pull off the side of the winding mountain road, Jones, the Forest Service biologist, explains that for decades, this 40,000-acre parcel was owned by the Maurer Land and Lumber Company. It was logged and mined for coal into the 80s before his agency purchased it. In the mid-2000s, Jones wondered if this land could be reforested with red spruce. Knee-high green baby spruce trees dot the brown landscape, growing up among the twisted, decaying limbs of downed hardwoods.
What we're doing is we're taking an area that was like a biological desert, stuck in arrested succession, the ground was compacted, and we're putting it back into a forest that eventually, like a long time from now, will be a functional red spruce ecosystem.
Jones admits that from the outside, it does seem crazy to create a new red spruce forest by wrecking a totally good hardwood forest.
Yeah, it looks crazy, doesn't it?
Downing trees, creating wetlands, uncompacting the soil. Jones says all of this increases the chances red spruce forest and the squirrel will thrive again here one day. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson on Cheat Mountain in West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.